From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. Today, the show is yours. Whatever's on your mind, call and let us know or email and let us know. Anything from car insurance rates, dating, traffic, HOAs, your neighborhood annoyance. Maybe you know a good auto mechanic you want to recommend, or you're working on the strip and something's bothering you there. What about the presidential race? And there are two candidates. Whatever's bugging you, whatever makes you happy, we want to hear from you. Think of it as a conversation, sitting on a stool at your favorite watering hole or talking to friends around coffee. We'll listen, swap stories, and answer questions where we can. Our number is 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552, and you can email son@knpr.org. And my special guest today is Senator Nicole Cannizzaro, Majority Leader of the Nevada State Senate. Senator, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
It's great to have you here. And I have to start with you because as someone steeped in politics like you are, I know you have a lot on your mind, and I have a million questions. First, this is an easy one. What do you love about Nevada?
Oh, gosh. I have to say I truly love this state. You know, I'm born and raised here in Las Vegas, which I remember as a kid growing up, people thought that was so crazy that a child lived in Las Vegas because they thought everyone lived on the Strip. And I think I've been trying to make this argument my whole life that Las Vegas has an amazing, you know, tourist corridor in the Strip and amazing shows and food and venues, and it's a great place to come and visit. We love for people to come and visit, but there is so much more to this state. And if you get outside of the Strip, you'll see that it's so much more than just a place for people to come, even though we love for them to come and to enjoy our beautiful resorts. But, you know, if you get outdoors, there's tons of outdoor space. You know, I remember as a kid going hiking up at Mount Charleston because that was like an easy thing to do with kids. And it was free, which was great for my parents because they were working class folks. And, you know, we would go out to Lake Mead and see, you know, what we could do just kind of hanging out on the beach for the day. I have a lot of family who lives in rural Nevada. My aunt and uncle and tons of cousins live in Yerington, Nevada. So we would sometimes venture up there for a few weeks in the summer months to visit family. And it's so cool to be in rural Nevada because there's so much to offer, farming and agriculture and culture and our native and indigenous populations. And then I went to school up in Reno. And so I got to experience what it was like to live in northern Nevada. And of course, Tahoe is there. And it is such a wonderful and unique state. And honestly, I think my favorite part is that not only are we diverse and truly do have so much to offer, but the people here are just fantastic. And this has been my home my whole life. And I can't even think, I was talking actually with my husband about this the other day, I can't even think of another place that I would want to live. And I love it here. It's home.
Well, not everything's perfect here. No. What bugs you about the state?
Oh, you know, I think, as you mentioned, nothing is ever perfect. And I think that there's so much more that we can be doing. And I think so much of that also prompted me to run for office in the first place. My parents didn't have a high school degree, either one of them. And so growing up here in Las Vegas, being able to access and to attend public education, I'm a graduate of Chaparral High School. I feel like I got a really great public education. And when I ran for office, so much of that was that I believed that we could be doing more to help students, that we could be doing more to help promote and to facilitate a good public education for every student here in Nevada, because that gives them opportunity. And when you give kids opportunity, I really do believe that they have an opportunity to succeed in whatever it is they're going to do.
So our education has been lacking.
Yes, yeah. And I think that that's been a huge focus of mine, certainly as an elected official, but definitely just as a Nevadan. And now, even to add another layer to that, as a mom. And I think we can be doing better in that space. I will say we've seen some improvements, but there's still work to do, and we know that. I also know that I come from a very working class background. My parents, you know, we didn't have all the amenities of life growing up. Mm-hmm. And there were times where we really struggled and somehow we made it. And so much of, too, again, I think about why I decided to, you know, throw my hat in the ring and get involved in this crazy business of politics. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, too, was what can we be doing for working families just like mine? Because there's so many of them here in the state. And how can we make Nevada, and I say this a lot, and I always say it's a little kitschy, but it's so true. How can we make this a place where everybody wants to live, work, and raise a family? How do we create that? And I think we've been doing a lot of work in that space, but those are the kinds of things that when I think about things in Nevada that, I guess, to your point, bug me, mm-hmm. Is really just what could we be doing better and how can we kind of work collectively to make that happen?
That's Senator Nicole Cannizzaro. She's the Senate Majority Leader of the Nevada State Senate. And we are here to answer what questions we can, really to take your comments about whatever's on your mind, what's keeping you up at night. Just think of this as a conversation at your favorite watering hole or maybe you're over coffee with friends. Give us a call. The number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552 or email son@knpr.org. And Senator, you saw the news from Arizona last week. Its Supreme Court ruled that all abortions there are now banned. And this is based on a law from 1864. Former Republican Governor Doug Ducey, who appointed the four of the conservative judges who made that ruling, immediately said he didn't like that they went that far. But then again, he keeps criticizing the Democratic governor, who says she will not let women or doctors be prosecuted for abortion. My question for you is, we keep hearing this is a state's issue. Governor Joe Lombardo says, relax, women and doctors are safe here. Do you feel we have a safe medical system for women who seek abortion in the state?
I believe we are very lucky to be in Nevada because we do have some protections that are different than these sort of what is referred to commonly as a trigger law or other laws that are being passed in state legislatures. We are not in that same position. I do not believe that with what we have here in Nevada, that we are fully protected. And
why?
I think that's why you've seen,
sure,
right, some legislation that I have certainly worked on this last legislative session, and I'm going to continue to work on in my time in the legislature. First and foremost, I think it's important to note because there's, I think, a misunderstanding sometimes about what exactly the state of the law is in Nevada. We have a statutory provision that protects the right to seek abortion care for within 24 weeks, mm-hmm, of a pregnancy. That law is a statute, though. It is not a constitutional right. And so when you pair a statute with something like Roe versus Wade, which recognized that there was this implicit right to privacy within the Constitution of the United States, there were significant protections for women here in Nevada. But with the overturning of Roe versus Wade and the Dobbs decision, that still leaves a lot of protections unaccounted for in Nevada law. And so last session, I passed a bill, which Governor Lombardo signed, it was Senate Bill 131, to say that if we have women and doctors here in Nevada that are seeking reproductive care, including abortion care, that we are not going to participate with other states seeking to come over our borders to prosecute either those doctors or those women. And I think that that's an important protection because the other side of this, right, in addition to women who are looking to become pregnant, who find themselves pregnant, or who are in the midst of a pregnancy where there are complications and they have to get reproductive care that could include receiving an abortion, they are scared and they are terrified and they are risking their health and their lives just to kind of seek that care. And we also have to protect on the other end of that, those providers, because we don't have enough of them generally. We certainly don't here in Nevada. And we have to provide those assurances that if they're practicing within their scope of medicine, they're not going to be prosecuted.
If this becomes part of our Constitution, does that protect women in this state if, let's say, the U.S. Supreme Court rules that all abortions are illegal? And I imagine a case like that is going to get before them over the next couple of years.
That, I think, is still an unknown. To your point, you know, we passed last session and I sponsored a constitutional amendment that is making its way on the legislative process side to say that we are going to protect all right to all reproductive care. And as we saw in Alabama, you know, the Dobbs decision in what it stands for and those legal principles affect things like IVF and fertility treatments and access to that for so many families. And I think the important part about even that is so many of those families have had such a struggle trying to have children. Mm-hmm. And so we really do need to, I think, take some affirmative steps to protect that. So we passed a resolution to put into the Nevada Constitution a right for every Nevadan to seek reproductive care, whether that is birth control, whether it's pre or postnatal care, whether it is IVF, tubal ligation, vasectomies, including abortion care, miscarriage management, because all of that falls under that same umbrella and is affected significantly by the Dobbs decision. If we pass an amendment like that to our Nevada state constitution, which that particular resolution would have to pass the next legislative session in the exact same form by the Nevada legislature, mm-hmm. and then it would go to a vote of the people in 2026. Mm-hmm. If a majority of Nevadans vote to put that in our constitution, it would be a constitutional right here in Nevada. Similar efforts are ongoing as well with another amendment that we expect to see hopefully this next coming up election in 24 that would just enshrine the right to receive abortion care here in Nevada. In either circumstance, what that creates is a constitutional right. And constitutional rights are protected differently than statutes. Statutes can be overturned. Statutes can be reversed by a subsequent legislative body. A Supreme Court could find that a statute is unconstitutional because it's weighing that statute against current constitutional rights. And so creating that constitutional right, I think, gives us the protections that you really want to have to assure access to health care here in Nevada. If the United States Supreme Court were to issue a ruling, I think some of this is going to turn on very intricate legal precepts. Because they'll have to do that in the wake of the Dobbs decision. And what does that mean? They will have to do that knowing that one of the pieces that came out of that Dobbs decision was that this was to be a state's rights. Hmm. And then evaluate that however it becomes before them, whether it's a constitutional right from another state or let's say it's a statute like we've seen happening where, for example, in Arizona, that was a statutory trigger law. And then another statute as well that was passed by a very recent mm-hmm. legislative body that actually said, you know, if the Supreme Court in Arizona agrees with it, if for whatever reason Roe versus Wade is overturned, mm-hmm. then the Arizona Supreme Court shall enforce this 1800s law, which the Republican governor signed at the time. So that's an interesting debate, I think, in and of itself. To argue that both the court went too far, but also you signed a piece of legislation that assures this to be the outcome. But I do think that making sure that states have those protections in place when and if, it's probably more of a when question, the United States Supreme Court takes up this in a larger frame, that they do so in a way that does preserve those states' rights. And the best way to do that is with a constitutional amendment.
Again, our number is 702-258-3552. I'm here with Senator Nicole Cannizzaro. She is the Senate Majority Leader, and next year they're going to have a very, very interesting legislative session. Our legislature, again, only meets every 2 years. They do have interim committee meetings. We're going to talk a bit about that in a little while. But first, I want to get to some of these calls. Chris from Las Vegas has an interesting call. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I'm a dog lover, like a lot of people are, a lot of people with pets in Las Vegas, and I've walked my dog and run my dog in a lot of locations. As the community has done better at putting up doggy bag dispensaries, but this is still the worst community I've ever been in or that I visit for people cleaning up after their dogs. And maybe just call a little publicity, a little public shaming. I don't know what the solutions are other than to say, again, where they've placed the dispensaries where people can get doggy waste bags, the problem has improved, but it still exists.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, it is, I don't know if it's sheer laziness, if people just don't want to deal with it. I mean, it is a major issue. Downtown, Summerlin, Henderson, Greenville, everywhere you go. It is a major, major problem.
Yeah, and I agree. So I currently have one pup His name is Reno. And he's 13. He's getting old. And then we have a cat. We have a cat named Jeff. But we just lost our 15-year-old beagle a little less than a year ago. And then a few years prior to that, we had a boxer mix. So I, you know, we had a dog-filled household with three guys that we would frequently take on walks. And we are the type that, you know, bring the bags with us just in case there's not a doggy dispenser mm-hmm. bag issue around. And I think, to Chris's point, you know, we really should all just be making sure that if you have a pet and you're taking it on a walk, like, don't leave that on someone's lawn. Don't leave that for someone to step in or their dog to get into or a child to step in. Bring your own bags. They sell them. And they even have, like, little clips. You can clip them on the leash. We have one of those. And you just pull them out. And
yeah. Oh, gosh. They have those clips? Oh,
yeah.
Man, that'd be a dream. Thank you so much for that call, Chris. Again, 702-258-3552. Blyer from Spring Valley has an interesting question as well. Welcome to the program. Oh, I'm sorry. David. David from Las Vegas. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. Senator, I owe you a debt of thank you. You probably don't know, you don't know me, but you helped my mother with Medicaid, and I really appreciate that. But my question is this. With the proposed film tax credits and stadiums and things like that, how do we balance economic development with the needs of education and the other desperate needs like Medicaid for the state?
Yeah, and thank you, David. And I'm glad that we were able to help your mom. I think so much of that is what we are striving to do. And in relation to your question, that is absolutely the question that we as legislators, and I think as a legislative body, have a duty to ask. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be a place where just because you show up and say we want to build something or we want to do something, that the state should give away taxpayer dollars or that we should provide other funding mechanisms that support those particular requests. I think we have to be smart about it. And I think some of the other things, and what is sometimes frequently left out of that, is that we have done a lot in the way of making sure that we are investing in education. This last legislative session, we were able to put $2 billion extra dollars into education here in Nevada. In addition to that, the legislature approved another $318 million or so in investment in public education. And this includes everything from making sure that we are increasing our per pupil funding to also investing in things like literacy programs, because we know that that is such a critical piece for kids who are entering education to be able to read. It is sort of that foundational piece, and there's tons of studies that show if a child can read, they're going to have much more success than if they sort of, you know, have to make their way through without having true reading comprehension and mm-hmm. literacy. We also set aside, I sponsored Senate Bill 231 to set aside $250 million for teacher and staff raises here in Nevada throughout the state. And we've been seeing in our interim finance committee, which approves the use of that money for teacher and staff raises, that in many of our districts, even small ones, teachers and support staff alike are receiving significant increases. And I do believe that public education and the success of education starts with having a qualified teacher and staff in every single classroom. It has to start there. And so we have to invest in our people. And so when we look at things like the stadium or potentially in the future talking about the viability of film tax credits, I don't think we should have that conversation without also recognizing that there have been significant investments in education and that we are starting to see some of those improvements and that we're going to hold them accountable.
Let me ask you this question. You know, do you see a difference between the appropriations or the benefits or the tax incentives given for the stadium and the benefits that Senator Roberta Lang is going to bring back in a bill next year, $95 million a year for 17 years. Some movie people say this will definitely draw the industry from Hollywood. Others say they're tired of tax dollars going to rich business people. But movie analysts also say this isn't baseball. This is different. What's your view?
There are still a lot of conversations to be had as it relates to film tax credits. Whenever we're looking at this, and I'll sort of just share my own personal analysis pieces, in addition to what I think is a legislative body we talk about, it is certainly, to David's point, you know, we have to make sure that first and foremost, we're funding education and we are investing in that in a real way, that we are also supporting some of these other programs like Medicaid and making sure that we're investing in health and human services. You've seen us do a lot in the space of mental health investments and making sure that we're starting to provide a lot of those. We just approved the renovation of a center in Reno that is going to provide behavioral support and mm-hmm. mental health access for so many folks up in Reno, and we're seeing similar efforts down here in the South and trying to expand into our rules and make sure that that's available. Those have to be our first piece to look at. Are we doing what we have to do as a state? And then also recognizing that there is absolutely a place for public and private partnerships to exist where we are promoting economic diversification, where we are promoting jobs for people here in the state. And so we have to have a lot of conversations. What do those jobs look like? Are they actually going to Nevadans? That has been a question that I have asked for everything that has come before that us, whether that is a big stadium project or even some of these other small business grants. If we're going to be investing in small business, because we know that that is also a huge piece, not only to ensure that we continue to get tax dollars, but also to promote economic independence, to make sure that we have a strong business community. We also have to look at the fact that when we bring and attract businesses here to Nevada or different industries, that those are really supporting jobs for Nevadans. They have to, if they're not doing that, then we're just subsidizing, you know, jobs for out of state. And that's not our job as a state legislature.
Do you get a lot of angry calls about the stadium deal?
Yes. And I completely understand some of the frustration when you see things like we should be doing better in education. And that's why when I spoke about this, you know, I want to start with, let's talk about what we have done in education and what we have been doing in education. Because even prior to this session, you know, we approved a mining education tax to bring in more dollars for education. We've made sure to rectify things like the marijuana tax. And there's no silver bullet that is going to perfectly fund education or solve every single problem in education. But I think when your elected officials are focused on making sure that that is sort of a starting point, then you can also, mm-hmm. at the same time, have simultaneous conversations about how do we diversify? How do we grow our economic basis? How do we attract more here?
And you think a lot of that, at least part of that, was done during the last session.
Yes.
We do have a call here, and we're actually getting near the end of the program. Jerry from Las Vegas actually has a question about gaming. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me again, Joe.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is that what is it going to take to get our legislators to start tapping into things like the mining industry and the gaming industry to make them pay their fair share in tax dollars and whatnot to take care of our educational systems? Because in my view and opinion, it's been gaming and mining that have kept education low in this state so that they would have low-cost labor available to them that would be willing and happy to take whatever revenue they were handing out to do the dirty work and the hard work.
That's a good point, Jerry. And we do have one of the lowest tax rates for revenue in the gaming industry in the country. It just seems like a sacrosanct area that nobody wants to touch. And I know legislators are a little scared of touching it. The industry will say, if you do this, we're not going to be able to hire as many people. On the other hand, people say, well, look at all these other states that are taxing a lot more. What are your thoughts?
There are a few things, I think, to that point that are worth taking a look at when we talk about, you know, how is it that we tax here in Nevada and what does that mean and what does that look like? And, you know, part of it is, too, recognizing that there have been, I think, there has been good progress in some of these areas, you know, and I speak specifically about mining. Mining is in a different position because of constitutional protections that exist.
That's right.
And so the legislature itself has some limited ability to discuss that. But I will say I have to give credit to them. You know, we in 2020, 2021, mm-hmm. I think it was, 2021, if I'm keeping my legislative sessions correctly, we were able to pass new mining tax money, for lack of a better word. And that money is going straight to education. And that is a significant pool of money that is coming in that is going towards our students. And I think that it is important to, while we can still have a conversation about how we fund the state and what does that look like and what does our tax basis look like, we also have to recognize places where we have seen good partnership and have been able to do more with the goal in mind of improving education. And I think too, with gaming, you know, we have had things like the room tax that have come in. We've been able to make sure that we direct that into education in a way that is not supplanting what the state's obligation would be versus what's coming in from that tax. And I think those are conversations that sometimes we don't have enough, but at the legislative level, we certainly do. We are seeing more money go into education. We are seeing a phenomenal investment from this last legislative session that I'm truly proud of. I think both supporting our staff and also supporting our overall investment in education is a huge step in the right direction. And we have to keep having those conversations and recognize that we have to do it in a way that also supports the industries that we have here that form our largest tax bases. A lot of our money does come from gaming, even though it may be low in comparison to other states.
Senator, that's all the time we have.
Okay.
Senate Majority Leader Nicole Cannizzaro of Las Vegas, District 6, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.